Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, June 25th, 2025. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Trump Justice Department sues Washington over new law requiring reporting of child abuse confessions. WSU told to expect more budget cuts. Budget reconciliation bill has Medicaid cuts to Planned Parenthood, likely to impact health outcomes for millions, including limiting cancer screenings. And more from the Wellness for All Fair that was held in Moscow on Tuesday. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Washington State University department heads have until Friday, July 11th, to submit preliminary plans to make budget cuts, the WSU Board of Regents is requiring. Earlier this month, the regents voted to implement over 4% in budget cuts to the school's operating budget. The June 5th Board of Regents meeting agenda said Washington State University will have $661 million in core operating funds during fiscal year 2026. In May, Washington Governor Bob Ferguson signed a bill reducing state funding to higher ed for the next fiscal year by 1.5%. The university is facing steep reductions in federal grant money due to DOGE. Several federal agencies are considering implementing caps on indirect costs for new grant awards. According to the Daily News, the budget cuts are not expected to be spread evenly across various WSU departments. Instead, some units will have zero reductions, while some units will face 10% budget reductions. WSU officials have excluded the College of Arts and Sciences, the Elson S. Floyd College of Medicine, libraries, External Affairs and Government Relations, Office of Research, and the WSU Police Department from the mandatory budget reductions. During the June Regents meeting, some board members said they expect layoffs at WSU. The presidents of Idaho's colleges and universities proposed pay freezes for themselves, and the State Board of Education today approved them. The board extended the contracts of the presidents of the University of Idaho, Boise State University, and Idaho State University. According to the Idaho Education News, board member Bill Gilbert said the presidents proactively proposed the freeze. Gilbert said they all felt that it was appropriate for them to hold their compensation level for this coming year. The universities, like all state agencies, are expecting tightening budgets. Governor Brad Little last week ordered all state agencies to prepare for mid-fiscal year budget cut contingencies of 2%, 4%, or 6%. Little also told departments to turn in only maintenance budgets for fiscal year 2027. That's because the state legislature granted $450 million in tax cuts and tax credits this year. A good portion of the tax credits will pay for private school expenses, including religious school expenses, for parents who apply for a new program. The salaries of the university presidents for the next fiscal year will be $479,000 for University of Idaho President C. Scott Green, $420,000 for Idaho State University President Robert Wagner, and $297,000 for Lewis Clark College President Cynthia Pemberton, and $449,000 for Boise State University Interim President Jeremiah Shin. Trump's Justice Department filed a civil rights lawsuit Monday against Washington over the state's Senate Bill 5375, which reclassifies Catholic priests as mandated reporters of child abuse. As mandated reporters, they would be required by law to report child abuse or neglect to law enforcement or the Department of Children, Youth, and Families if they find out about it. This responsibility will extend to information disclosed in confessions. The law is set to take effect Sunday, July 27th. Archbishop Paul Etienne of Seattle, Bishop Joseph Tyson of Yakima, and Bishop Thomas Daly of Spokane filed a lawsuit May 29th, a few weeks after the Justice Department opened a civil rights investigation against Washington. The three Catholics say the law violates their First Amendment freedom of religion rights. While the bishop's lawsuit names Governor Bob Ferguson, Attorney General Nick Brown, and the prosecuting attorneys from each of Washington's 39 counties as defendants, the Justice Department lawsuit only names the state of Washington as a defendant. United States Assistant Attorney General Harmeet K. Dhillon said in a news release, the Justice Department will not sit idly by when states mount attacks on the free exercise of religion. In filing their lawsuit, federal attorneys said the punishment for directly violating the sacramental seal of confession is excommunication. A more direct burden on the exercise of religion would be difficult to imagine. Governor Ferguson, who is a Catholic, said when signing the bill requiring disclosure of abuse, learned confession did not give him pause. He later said he was disappointed my church is filing a federal lawsuit to protect individuals who abuse kids. A provision of the so-called One Big Beautiful Bill would eliminate federal funding for Planned Parenthood and any health care clinics that provide abortions. In 2023, government grants and reimbursements made up 39% of Planned Parenthood's revenue. Between 2019 and 2021, federal grants to Planned Parenthood health centers amounted to over $21 billion per year, and Planned Parenthood affiliates received about $148 million in federal grants. The Trump administration describes abortion as a violation of faith and conscience. Planned Parenthood of Greater Washington and North Idaho Chief External Affairs Officer Lindsey Johnson told the Lewiston Tribune patients come to them for STI screenings and treatment, pregnancy testing, and breast exams. Johnson said, it's just the type of care that anyone needs to be healthy. Planned Parenthood also provides pap smears, vasectomies, and HIV preventative treatments. The office of Democratic U.S. Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington published a fact sheet showing roughly 50,000 Planned Parenthood patients in the state are on Medicaid. According to the Guttmacher Institute, Planned Parenthood serves one-third of all safety net family planning contraceptive patients nationwide. The Institute estimates federally qualified health care centers in Washington would need to increase their contraceptive service capacity by 143% to account for the loss of Planned Parenthood services. Johnson said the transition of all Planned Parenthood Medicaid patients to federally qualified facilities would be unsustainable. He said, they are dealing with large patient loads, and having to take on Planned Parenthood's patients would cause people to have to wait longer for appointments, again, putting off this preventative care that's so important. Johnson, the office of U.S. Senator Cantwell, and the Guttmacher Institute have all warned of the spike in late cancer diagnoses if Medicaid funding for Planned Parenthood is cut. OBGYN Dr. Asif Lukman of Jefferson Healthcare in Port Townsend said the federal cuts could impact the early detection of cancers. Lukman said, the big problem is absorbing the cancers that ensue because of those screenings not being done. You're tuned into the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Love's Kombucha is proud to support KRFP, Radio Free Moscow. Love's Kombucha is a fun, lively, fermented probiotic tea that is craft brewed right here in Moscow. Available online at loveskombucha.com.
For information on becoming a KRFP underwriter, go to krfp.org and click Support KRFP.
During yesterday's Wellness for All event on Main Street in Moscow, KRFP citizen journalist Brenda Cox spoke with Idaho Coalition for Safe Healthcare Executive Director Amber Nelson.
The reason that this organization exists is because of the legislative overstepping into medical care for the state. There are a number of laws on the books and a number of laws that certain legislators would like to see passed that inhibit the ability of our physicians across the state to provide standard of care for their patients.
What kind of care specifically?
Well, there are two that I can name off the top of my head. One is medical care for minors. We have a current law that was put forth in 2024, and it requires that for any treatment of minors that a parent must provide consent. So this creates issues for our providers in a number of ways. So if they are providing medical care or want to provide medical care for pregnant or parenting teens, those pregnant or parenting teens need the consent of their parents. So what's pretty wild about this is that as soon as that pregnant or parenting teen has a baby, she is 100% responsible for the medical decisions for that baby, but she is not allowed to ask for an epidural without parental consent. She is not allowed to confirm prenatal care without parental consent. So while the idea of the law, we want parents to be involved in the medical treatment decisions for their children, is appropriate, of course we want that, but we can't legislate those kinds of family relationships. We have a severe physician shortage in the state of Idaho, and one of the ways that we create a more positive practice environment for clinicians to come to this state is by having policies that allow them to provide medical standard of care to their patients.
That was Idaho Coalition for Safe Healthcare Executive Director Amber Nelson. Cox also spoke with Baylin Haplin of Oma's Place.
Our big idea is that we're the home base for Palouse Dementia Care. We're an in-home private caregiving company. Our big idea is keeping our loved ones in their home as long as we can, preferably until the end. We do companion care and we do comfort care. But until now, we haven't had an office. We wanted to make our office more than just an office, more than just a home base. We made it a community. We have a salon for our clients to come in and get their hair and nails done. We have an activity room to do arts or listen to music or play dominoes. And most importantly, we just have a place that's safe, a warm, welcoming environment for people who are struggling with their memory to come and feel safe and supported. So we actually opened last April, April 2025. Our doors opened and we've been reaching out, getting clients. We had some clients with Palouse Dementia Care, but we wanted to get in touch with the community. Our hours are Monday through Friday, 9 to 3. And if you want to find us, we're where the old Zions Bank was downtown.
That was Baylin Haplin of Oma's Place. We also spoke with Ken Fonts, who was tabling for the Unitarian Universalist Church of the Palouse.
Information and brochures about the Unitarian Universalism and what we believe and what we support, that type of thing.
Okay.
And so we're very active in the community for equity and justice and social justice activities, and always have been. And so we're continuing with that. We believe in wellness for everyone on all aspects, and that's why we're here today supporting this.
That was Ken Fonts of the Unitarian Universalist Church of the Palouse, one of the co-sponsors of yesterday's Wellness for All Fair on Main Street in downtown Moscow.
As the Trump administration considers a major overhaul of the nation's leading disaster relief agency, a new poll shows the majority of Americans think the government should help impacted communities in Wyoming and across the U.S. The May poll from Pew Research Center shows more than 75% of Americans say it's a good idea for the government to set stricter building standards for new constructions in places at high risk of extreme weather, including floods, major wildfires, and droughts. and it found 64% think government should provide financial assistance for communities to rebuild after an event. Senior researcher Brian Kennedy with the center says support for those ideas crosses party lines.
Large shares of Democrats and Republicans say that it's a good idea to set stricter building standards in these communities. And similarly, majorities say it's a good idea for the government to provide financial assistance for people in high-risk areas to rebuild.
This as Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem considers renaming or reforming the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, after she ended the Building Resilient Infrastructure and Communities program in April. According to the National Centers for Environmental Information, there were 27 climate disasters in the U.S. that caused at least $1 billion in damages last year, making it the fourth costliest year on record. Survey respondents were more split on other approaches. Half of Democrats agree the government should help cover the rising cost of homeowners insurance in those places, while less than a third of Republicans agreed. Regardless of party affiliation, Kennedy says that most people who have experienced extreme weather connect it to climate change.
When we look at this data and what we've seen over the past several years, it's the broad pattern in that you see large shares of Americans say climate change has contributed at least a little.
He adds that these questions are relatively new ones for Americans to be considering, and he expects to have more data in the future. I'm Kathleen Shannon with Wyoming News Service.
In California, families shoulder most of the burden of dementia care, according to a new study. Researchers from the University of Washington find that patients in the Golden State require about $55,000 a year in care, but only about $10,000 of that is paid through private or government insurance. Lead research scientist Amy Lestuka says the direct costs of doctor visits, prescriptions, home health aides, and nursing homes are just the beginning.
Particularly important to look at those indirect costs because people with dementia tend to need a lot of care, especially as they get into the later stages. They can need round-the-clock care.
Researchers calculated those indirect costs, how much you would have to pay to hire someone to cover all the hours family and friends put in. Data show that Americans spend $53 billion a year on direct medical care for the country's 5.5 million dementia patients. But the real cost is five times higher, at $277 billion. Lestuka says states should do more to support caregivers.
I would say invest in adult day centers, because that way you have a place where someone can go during the day and get some cognitive stimulation and get cared for. So then if your child is taking care of you, they could still work.
The California Department of Aging's website lists programs designed to lighten the load and help pay family caregivers. Meanwhile, the reconciliation bill currently under consideration in the U.S. Senate, known as the One Big Beautiful Bill, could have profound effects on services that help older Americans age in place. The bill seeks to eliminate the Federal Administration for Community Living, an agency that oversees the regional councils on aging that run programs like Meals on Wheels. I'm Suzanne Potter.
A Central Montana food bank has seen more traffic since it expanded last fall. As Congress considers cuts to safety net programs, including grocery dollars, food bank staff know they may be impacted. In 2024, Helena Food Share served more than 4,000 households total. Now it serves roughly 1,700 households each month. The group relocated in October, and Executive Director Jordan Everett says the new Community Food Resource Center allows for increased offerings, including a more effective grocery rescue program, which reallocates foods from grocery stores that have passed their sell-by dates.
One aspect of our new building is our commercial kitchen space. And so we are able to reproduce that food into individual meals and products that goes out into the market for customers.
Cuts to safety net programs proposed in the federal budget bill could bring in more community members seeking food support. But Everett says funding for Helena Food Share largely comes from the community. So while potential federal budget cuts will impact operations, they won't close their doors. The American Heart Association contributed to Helena Food Share's expansion by funding construction of its large refrigeration space. Cherish Heart, with the group, says it offers grants for many organizations focused on healthy food.
We know that food insecurity has been rising, and so we've been trying to work with more organizations on tackling that food insecurity, but thinking about it with that lens of nutrition as well.
She says the association has also provided grants for produce wash stations and freeze-drying machines. I'm Kathleen Shannon with Big Sky Connection.
Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, a chance of sprinkles tonight, mostly cloudy, low 50. Increasing clouds tomorrow, high 76. West winds 5 to 10, gusts up to 20. Mostly cloudy Thursday night, low 48. And mostly clear Friday through Monday, with highs of 74 on Friday, 77 Saturday, 86 on Sunday, and 94 on Monday. Lows will be around 48 Friday night and Saturday night, and 53 Sunday night. Current temperature is 77. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. And once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robertus. David Katz assisted with tonight's newscast, and Brenda Cox also assisted. Have a good night. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. We'll have a Geyer commentary coming up next, and that'll be followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica, in the 6:30 to 7:30 time slot. 7:30, Lockdown Mosh Pit. At 8:30, we will have Grateful Dead Through the Decades, hosted by Arlene, and Sounds of the Future is on the air at 10 p.m. Music, entertainment, info through throughout your evening. KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by listeners like you and by Palouse Prairie Charter School, an EL Education accredited expeditionary learning model school serving students in northern Idaho. PPCS is a free public charter school that combines hands-on learning, rigorous academics, outdoor adventure, and character development. PalouseProairieSchool.org. Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by Moscow Contemporary, which connects, supports, and creates community through art and arts education. Moscow Contemporary is located at 2012 West Pullman Road and moscowcontemporary.org.
Version, quote unquote, in Nature. One of Donald Trump's first acts as president was to sign an executive order affirming that the two sexes, male and female, quote, are not changeable and are grounded in a fundamental and incontrovertible reality. In October 2023, Moscow Pullman Daily News columnist Terrence Day tried to preempt this biological nonsense with a column entitled, quote, Intersex is Real, Just Not Binary. Sex differentiation lies on a continuum between male and female, and some people end up somewhere in the middle as intersexual. There may be as many as 137 million people in the world in this category. That means, as Day calculates, that there are, quote, 34,000 intersexual Idahoans, and every one of them deserves a place to relieve themselves. They also have a right not to be sexually mutilated at birth to enforce a false binary standard. Transsexuals choose surgery, but intersexual infants are operated on, sometimes with debilitating effects, without their consent. In what follows, I want to go beyond the human realm to describe the incredible array of sexualities in the animal world. Many intersexual humans have both sex organs, and this feature is found in most land gastropods and is also found in 370 fish species. Writing for the journal Nature Ecology and Evolution, Volume 3, Number 12, the authors state that, quote, same-sex sexual behavior has been observed in over 1,500 animal species. For example, 10% of male domestic sheep prefer their own sex exclusively, and 30% engage in same-sex sexual acts. Calling some of these acts homosexual is a misnomer, not only because homo means the human genus, but also because many of these behaviors, such as a male animal mounting another, are acts of social dominance, not sexual. For example, the men in biblical Sodom engaged in, and aggressive males in American prisons still perform, power rape, not intimate sex. Many same-sex animal behaviors appear to be intimate and long-term. Lifelong pair bonding has been observed in male western gulls and black swans. Same-sex male swans, which comprise 25% of mating pairs, will copulate with females but incubate their eggs after chasing them away. As a strong argument for gay parenting, one could cite the fact that black swan male parents have fledgling rates 50% higher than the male-female parents. The business journal Forbes, March 6, 2023, reported on research that concluded that, quote, children with gay, lesbian, or transgender parents fare as well or better than children with parents of the opposite sex. Biologists George and Molly Hunt maintain a research project on California's Santa Barbara Island. They were puzzled that 10% of the western gull nests, they observed, had six eggs rather than the usual two or three. What they discovered was that two females, after having mated with males, were not only nesting together, they were also simulating the same copulation behavior of heterosexual gulls. After their paper about female gulls was published, the Hunts were condemned for insinuating that homosexuality was, in fact, natural. Congress intervened, temporarily blocking the National Science Foundation budget because it had partially funded the Hunts' research. Next week, I will comment on the cultural and religious aspects of this topic. This is Nick Geyer, the Palouse Pundit, requesting that you read about the real meaning of sodomy at nfgeyer.com. Email me at ngeyer006@gmail.com.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leiserwitz, and this is Climate Connections. As the climate warms, heat waves are growing more intense, and more places are at risk of reaching temperatures that people cannot tolerate, even if they're drinking lots of water or resting in the shade.
Doing things like moderating physical activity, staying out of the sun, and being well hydrated, the traditional advice that's given during extreme heat episodes, that won't cut it.
Tom Matthews is a climate scientist at King's College London. He says at a certain point, people's body temperatures start to rise uncontrollably, and they cannot cool off without external cooling like air conditioning. In a recent study, his team estimated that if the world warms about 1.8 degrees Fahrenheit more, a total area roughly the size of the U.S. could reach temperatures that cross this dangerous threshold, even for young, healthy adults. An even larger area will reach temperatures that could be deadly for older adults, whose threshold is lower.
It's generally subtropical and tropical locations. South Asia stands out as particularly at risk. Sahara and Africa, too, very much at risk.
So increasing people's access to air conditioning in these and other at-risk areas will be critical for saving lives. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.